Good afternoon, and welcome to our visitors we have with us. A nice surprise to be able to have those who were here before and coming back and visiting with us and being able to share that time. And of course, the visitors we have with us online. We know that each week we have various individuals who join us online from across the country, so it's nice to have you with us. For other parts of the country, it's the end of the Sabbath for them with a 2 or 3 hour time difference. And they said, we end our Sabbath by watching your webcast in Los Angeles in the late afternoon for them. So we welcome you as well and for joining us. We're seeing more and more foods being altered and changed. That's something that for those of us who are food lovers, we hate to see some of those things. We know that even the rules and guidelines for what is organic is changing. Yesterday at Sam's Club, I was going through and it said $5 off of sashimi-grade fresh Atlantic salmon. I was like, ooh, and I go over and it said farm-raised, and I was like, okay, so it's not Atlantic salmon, it's maybe originated in the Atlantic, but it was farm-raised, color-added, and you think, well, what do they add color to salmon for? Well, with the farm-raised salmon and the GMO or genetically modified salmon, the color of the meat is gray, and so they add red to make it look like red salmon. So those are some of the reasons why over the years, multiple reasons, but some of the reasons why we've chosen, okay, it's hard to find good fish anymore or salmon like that. I saw a portrayal of an individual this week online. And he and his daughter were eating a hamburger in a restaurant. And they both had this look of, you know, this is such a wonderful burger. The daughter says, this burger is amazing. And the dad says, it's plant-based. And the daughter goes, oh, what plant? And he goes, a processing plant. Now, that's the kind of burger I can eat, one that's gone through a processing plant. To me, there's nothing like real meat or having something that grass-fed, something that's natural, something that has a good flavor to it. And I know several of us here in the congregation like to grill, smoke, saute, souve, like to cook meats and enjoy those meats. So I wanted to give a Bible study today. I want to focus on something that has recently come out in one of our publications, What Do We Believe? And this is sent out to the ministry and covering particular questions that sometimes come up in congregations or may arise over the years. And I want to focus on that today. And, of course, it being a different format, we're going to do a Bible study to begin with, and then we'll have another song, and then I'll do a split sermon. I was told to watch my time. Hopefully it'll be a split sermon and not a full Bible study and a full sermon. Let me ask a question. How do you like your steak? Now, people are like, oh, I'd love to think of steak, especially around Feast of Tabernacles. We're having a potluck today, and we think of food. Everybody has different preferences, or many do, on steak. That question's often asked at the restaurant when you order a steak. They said, how would you like your steak? Is there a wrong answer? Is well done wrong? No. If that's the way you'd like to have your steak, you might be paying for something that is missing some flavor or is hard to eat. But well done is not wrong. Is rare wrong? Well, the answer again is no. Some call that blue, or some say, no, that's not blue, that's raw. That's raw meat. But it all deals with preference and moderation. When I was 16 years old, I worked at Wendy's restaurant. That was one of my first fast food chains. I only worked at a fast food chain for 6 months. So I worked at Wendy's, and I happened to be working on the grill one day. And this individual, he started coming back as a repeat customer, but every time he came in, he said, I want my burger a particular way. So then he would come in, and if I was on the grill, he's like, you know how I want it. He said, I want you to put the burger on the grill. You had Wendy's square patties, just raw meat. He said, put it on the grill, and when it starts to sizzle, flip it over. And he said, then take it off. And so the first time, he was leaning around watching, and I put it on the grill, and he goes, okay, that's long enough, and I flipped it. and it had like a light little brown sear on some of the meat. The other side, he did the same thing, and I'm scooping it up almost like a can of dog food, trying to get it on a bun, and he said, "That's perfect. That's how I love it." And to me, it was raw meat with some seared edges. Now, they wouldn't allow that today. There's all kinds of guidelines that have been put into place. Yet people argue over the point of color, juice, blood, and what is acceptable and what is not acceptable. Occasionally, I like to make tataki. If you don't know what tataki is, it's I like to use New York, but you take a piece of meat and either sauté it or sear it, and it's raw in the or not raw in the center, but you slice it and you lay it over the top of rice, almost like sushi, and lay it on the top. When we think of sushi, most people say, "Oh, raw fish. I can't stand raw fish." There's a lot of sushi that has cooked fish, but there's also sushi. You know, most sushi is fresh fish, but a lot of times it's the rice vinegar and other things that actually kill any bacteria, kill any germs, and make it safe to eat. Some people say, "No, it's still raw fish, and it's wrong. Shouldn't eat raw fish." But sometimes questions like these come up, and especially about blood, fat, and animal organs from clean meats. Now, we know clean and unclean meats. We don't have to decide and say, okay, well, we do. But you don't have to think about, can I eat pork or can I eat, should I eat beef? You know, we know that God said beef. That's what we're to eat. Or other clean animals, beef, lamb, goat. There are clean animals that we can eat. Now, some claim, and they tell others, out of all the clean animals that we can't eat, they say, no, there's limitations on what you can eat of the clean animals. Some have told others, you can't eat the heart, you can't eat the liver, you can't eat the tongue. I don't know how many of you have had tongue before, beef tongue, and they actually remove the taste buds and all those things. But if it's cooked right, and it can taste like roast beef, it's actually very good. But tongue, and they chop it up and dice it and make tacos. And it's actually, if you're hungry, you're gonna hate the Bible study. But that's not a true statement that we cannot eat those. The heart and the tongue are actually muscles, believe it or not. And it is a muscle of the meat. People say, well, you can't eat those. You have to eat the muscle. Well, the heart is a muscle, and so is the tongue. And with a cow, all the different licking and things that they do, it's a pretty good sized muscle. When I was younger, cow tongue was so inexpensive. You could get hooves and tongue so cheap in the store, and now it's as much or more than steak because people like it as a delicacy. The cow tongue cooked the right way is actually very good. Heart is considered a delicacy. With my deer, I was just talking about my deer that I got this last year, bringing it back on the airplane in an ice chest with rollers so I could get it through the airport. There was only a certain amount of the deer I could bring back, and I wanted to make sure I brought back the heart because that's, they say for a hunter, that's the first thing that you should eat is the heart, and it's considered a delicacy. I want to read from masterclass.com. It is hunting season delicacy and typically one of the first cuts of meat that a hunter will cook since organ meat doesn't last as long as other parts of the meat. From practicalselfreliance.com, properly prepared deer heart tastes like the most tender beef tenderloin you've ever sunk your teeth into and without any hints of gaminess. If it's cooked properly, it tastes like filet mignon. If the heart is cut properly into steaks, your guests will never know that they're eating heart. And so don't be surprised if you come to my house and I wouldn't serve you something that you might not be able to swallow after. Yet some insist still no organs can be eaten. Grit.com, G-R-I-T, says deer hearts as well as other hearts of other animals are high in iron, zinc, selenium, vitamins B2, B6, and B12. If you're feeling tired and run down or have high blood pressure, eating heart regularly can help you improve your health and even boost energy. There are certain meats that are better for other things, such as liver. Then we have the topic of blood and fat. And I think that usually becomes more of the discussion topic of what can be eaten or what cannot be eaten. And there are opinions over what blood is, and there's opinions over what fat is, just as there's opinions over heart, tongue, and liver. What does the church teach? Well, I want to read from the latest What Do We Believe? It's a feature of the Ministerial News Journal and briefly explains the traditional teachings of the church on certain subjects. And so we get these occasionally, and it'll talk about various things that have come up from time to time or things that come in for personal correspondence that there's a lot of questions about. So this What Do We Believe is about what parts of the clean animals can be eaten. It says, God's law regarding clean and unclean meats is clear to us. What may not be as clear to some concerns what parts of a clean creature may or may not be eaten. In general, the law regarding clean meats does not prohibit the consumption of any part of a clean creature with only a few exceptions. But those exceptions are important for us to know. The primary exceptions are blood and fat. And while both of these were instructed to be offered on the altar as part of the animal sacrifices to God, Leviticus 17:6, they are nonetheless prohibited for human consumption. This shall be a perpetual statute throughout your generations in all your dwellings, that you shall neither eat fat nor blood. So I wanted to go through this. Several other pastors in talking, we got this a couple months ago. But one in particular, he says, I gave a sermonette on this because I wanted to make sure this was a topic covered in my area. So I started to make a sermonette, and I ended up with a full Bible study. There's other things I wanted to add to it, and it's one of those topics that I think an hour or more would be too much, but it ended up a perfect timing, hopefully, for Bible study. So number one, it talks about the prohibition of blood. It says, whatever a man of the house of Israel or the strangers who dwell among it, who eats any blood, I will set my face against that person who eats blood and will cut him off from all my people. That is very important. God says, don't eat blood. For the life of the flesh is the blood, and I have given it to you upon the altar to make atonement for your souls, for it is the blood that makes atonement for the soul. Therefore I said to the children of Israel, no one among you shall eat blood, nor shall a stranger who dwells among you eat any blood. For it is the life of the flesh. Its blood sustains its life. Therefore I said to the children of Israel, you shall not eat blood of any flesh, for the life of the flesh is its blood, and whoever eats it shall be cut off. That's Leviticus 17:10-14. Leviticus 19 says, you shall not eat anything with the blood. Leviticus 19:26. And then also in Deuteronomy 12:23. Deuteronomy 12:23 says, only be sure that you do not eat the blood, for the blood is the life, and you shall not eat the life with the meat. Then why is it that some demand you have to cook a steak completely and remove any liquid from that, otherwise you're eating blood? The article goes on and says, blood refers to the fluids that are in the blood vessels, which carries all the life-giving substance to the flesh. This blood is quickly drained out of the animal's flesh during the butchering process. That's important to understand. The blood is drained. Now, when I don't want to get too graphic, but when you kill an animal in the wild and you shoot it, when you actually go through the process of cleaning, I'll say cleaning the deer, most of the blood is already out. And you make sure that all the blood is drained out of the meat. And that's what it's saying here. During the butchering process, the blood is drained out from the animal. Modern scientist has identified the reasons that consuming blood is unwise. There are certain things that you don't want to consume the blood. And God said, that's not what you're to do anyway. USDA says blood is removed from beef during the slaughter and only a small amount of it remains within the muscle tissue. Since beef is 3/4 water, this natural moisture combined with a protein is the source of the liquid in your packaging. So when you open up a package and liquid runs out, sometimes it's because you'll see like especially with chicken, 20% water added or 15% water added. You thaw chicken and there's just water running off of it. Part of that is marketing so they can make more money because they're charging you for water and you're paying for chicken. The other part is they to make the meat have much more moisture in it. So there's different reasons for that. The article goes on in this, what do we believe? Some people assume that the red liquid commonly seen in packages of raw steaks, roast, or other meats must be blood. If I would have purchased the salmon at Costco and opened it up, red fluid would have came from that. And it wouldn't have been blood from a salmon. It's the dye and the liquid. So here, when you're dealing with meats, it says most people assume that it must be blood. Likewise, people often assume that the reddish juices that flow out when cutting into a steak that's cooked rare or medium must be blood. However, this is not blood. Again, it's important to understand when you're cooking and you cut into a steak and juice runs out, that is juice from the meat, and people say, that's blood, we can't eat it, you have to eat it dry. You have to make sure everything is removed from it. And that's just not the case. Rather, it's a combination of water, which comprises 75% of the animal and contributes to the juiciness of a steak, and a muscle protein called myoglobin. Myoglobin is a protein within the meat with this liquid, and this myoglobin is what makes it look red. Myoglobin looks like blood on your plate because it's like hemoglobin. The iron in myoglobin turns red when it's exposed to oxygen, and that's why the muscle tissue is red. Now, stores, they dye meats as well, not just salmon. Even regular meats, even if it's not genetically modified or changed, they dye it red, much like butter. I won't take too much time. I'm getting off. I know I'm getting off here. Butter is one of those things that they used to dye yellow, and the more yellow in the butter or the more yellow in the cheese meant there was more milk fats, and so they started putting dyes in cheese, and that's why cheddar's orange today. Cheddar is not normally orange; it's white. So they dye it. Well, they dye meats as well, but the thing that naturally makes meat red is this myoglobin. Most animals have plenty of myoglobin in their tissues, which is why that meat that comes from mammals, including beef, lamb, or pork, is known as red meats. This is from steakschool.com. The meat that comes from animals low in levels of myoglobin, like poultry, or have no myoglobin, like some sea life, are known as white meats. The protein in steak, like a sponge, holds the water. As a meat ages or is handled or cut, proteins lose the ability to hold on to the water, and over time that water is released and myoglobin flows out with it. And when it hits the air, it turns red and you go, oh, there's still blood in there. The only way you're going to get all of that out is just squeeze it out or twist the meat and get everything out of it, but then you're not going to have a very good meat either. So the proteins in a steak are like that sponge, and over time the water is released. That is from meatscience.com, giving the liquid a red or pink color. Myoglobin is often seen after thawing a frozen steak. You may not see it when you freeze it and wrap it up and put it in the freezer. You take it out and you start to thaw it, and there's a reason for that. Because the ice crystals break down more of the proteins and it runs out when you're thawing it. That's another reason why steaks aren't quite as good if they've been previously frozen. You know, if you get fresh steak and you cook it, it hasn't been frozen, and it hasn't lost a lot of the natural juices that are inside of it. And again, it's a good time to eat a steak, but often we say, oh, that's a great deal. I'm going to get steak and freeze it. But you lose a little bit of that with the freezing, and the myoglobin comes out. Number two prohibited was fat. He says, speak to the children of Israel, you shall not eat any fat or of ox or sheep or goat, and the fat of an animal that dies naturally, and the fat of what is torn by the wild beast, that it may be, and it may be used in any other way, but you shall not, or by no means, eat it. For whoever eats of the fat of the animal, which men offer as an offering made by fire to the Lord, that person who eats it will be cut off from his people. The fat that is being referred to here. Now, we're reading from Hebrew and Greek or Latin and translating it into English. The word fat rendered here is the intermuscular fat, which is found between different layers of the muscles of an animal. There's another kind of fat called marbling, which is the intramuscular, not intermuscular, but intramuscular. This is the flecks of white fat found within the muscle, such as ribeye. You see a ribeye steak and it's got all the marbling in it. And people look for better marbling, or you look for Wagyu because it's got a lot of marbling in it. It is clear that God's law does not prohibit marbled meat. Now, I've had people tell me, no, you have to cut all the fat off of any meat before you cook it. And I said, what do you do with a ribeye? I said, do you sit there and cut all the little strips out of them in between? And they said, well, I thought we couldn't eat ribeye. And I'm like, no, ribeye is a good cut. That's actually known as one of the better cuts of meat if you're ordering in a restaurant because of the marbling. So it says it does not prohibit marbled meat. In description of animal sacrifices, the meat of the animal was often consumed by those who were offering it. Yet in specifying what parts of the animal were to be burned upon the altar, God said, all the fat is the Lord's, Leviticus 3:16, emphasis is ours. If he meant the marbling within the meat would be included in this, then much of the meat would have to be burned up and very little would be left for human consumption. In regard to the fat that is removed and burned upon the altar, several scriptures translate the word fat from the Hebrew word peder, P-E-D-E-R, which Brown Driver Briggs' Hebrew definition of peder is fat or suet. Now, most of us would say, oh, no, I wouldn't like to eat suet. If you know what this type of fat is like, if you've ever processed animals, it's like what you see lard today. It's just a very thick, heavy fat. Strong's Dictionary says this word comes from an unused root word meaning greasy or suet or fat, and this is the word used in Leviticus 1:8, 12, and 8:20. Today, this fat is often called hard or cover fat, and we realize God's prohibition is the consumption of this particular kind of fat. There is nothing that prohibits such fat from remaining on the meat while cooking on the edges of the steak, for example. However, the fat itself should not be eaten. If you like brisket, which those of us who like to smoke like brisket, brisket has a layer of that fat on top of it. Stores leave about sometimes an inch layer of it on there, and you have to cut a couple pounds of fat off and throw it in the trash, and you paid for that as meat. But that has that thick layer on it, and you trim it down, you cook it, it melts off the steak or the brisket while you're cooking it, and so you don't end up eating that at the end. So brisket, it's rendered off in the process. But it does not have to be removed before cooking. If you removed all of that before cooking and made sure there's no fat attached to a brisket, you might as well slice it thin and make beef jerky. It's going to be dry. There's going to have some dryness to it. So it does not have to be removed. Now, some will still argue any fat left on the meat is wrong. It has to be cut off before any cooking is done. Now, I know some people like chicken skin or the chicken fat after you boiled a chicken or roasted a chicken. Like to have that. My sister was like that. She loved that. She would say, are you going to eat that on a plate? And I'm like, no. And she would take that and eat it. But it's a personal choice and not something that we correct or chastise a brother over saying, okay, well, I feel it's wrong or I think it's wrong because of this scripture, so I'm going to tell you that it's wrong. If you personally feel it's wrong to cook meat that has fat on it, then you don't want to do it. You don't want to sin against your own conscience. But we need to make sure that we're not enforcing that on others. When this was brought up to me as a question, they said, you know, you have to cut all the fat off of meat before you cook it. Otherwise, you're sinning because you're eating meat that was cooked with fat. So I asked a particular question, and I will ask that question here. Is it wrong to eat the fatted calf? Let's go to Proverbs chapter 15. Proverbs chapter 15. Proverbs 15, verse 17, better is a dinner of herbs where love is than the fatted calf with hatred. And you could say, well, he's not telling you you can eat the fatted calf. He's saying you shouldn't. It's better with a dinner of herbs. But the fatted calf was considered to be the best. To get a fatted calf meant you were getting the highest grade of meat. And it still is that way today. ESV.org or EnglishStandardVersion.org asks a question, how is a fattened calf different from a regular calf? It says, how is a fattened calf different from a regular calf? A fattened calf is one that has been set aside for a special occasion because it is a special cut of meat. While most cattle simply graze in the fields, the select animals are fed in a stall, and the extra food and the inability to roam meant it would gain weight more quickly. So you would stall, like you say, you stall an ox, put him in there, feed him grain, and he's not out walking the fields and moving like normal, and so he gets fatter and fatter. That is a fatted calf. What did Christ say about the fatted calf? Let's go to Matthew chapter 22. And there's a reason I bring up this particular question about is it wrong to eat a fatted calf? Matthew chapter 22 and verse 2. He's talking about the kingdom of God. And he says, the kingdom of heaven is like a certain man who arranged a marriage for his son. He sent out his servants and called those who were invited to the wedding, and they were not willing to come. We know the moral and the lesson from that. Again, he sent out to the other servants, saying, tell those who are invited and see that I have prepared my dinner. My oxen and fatted cattle are killed, and all things are ready. Come to the wedding. So he's referring to the kingdom of God, and he's saying, it's like having a meal with a fatted calf. Now, if eating a fatted calf was wrong, that's kind of awkward that he would go, come to my wedding supper with a fatted calf. We would probably feel, you know, if that's wrong, then it would make it awkward. English Standard Version says that my fat calves have been slaughtered. American Standard Version says my oxen and my fatlings are killed, if you've ever heard the words fatlings referring to cattle. William's translation says, my bullocks and my fatlings are butchered. It was the prime cuts of meat. And so he's saying, I want you to come and enjoy a wedding that is prepared. And he said, come to my dinner of oxen and fatted cattle, and all things are ready. Come to this particular wedding. Let's go to Luke chapter 15. Luke chapter 15. Another parable that you're familiar with. Luke 15 and verse 22 says, but the father said to his servants, bring the best robe. This is talking about the prodigal son who had gone, spent all of his life savings, spent his inheritance, and now has come back. He says, bring the best robe, put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and a sandal on his feet, and bring the fatted calf here and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. Again, another parable saying, bring a fatted calf and enjoy a meal. Verse 24, for this is my son who is dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found, and they began to make merry. So we have to ask the question, does this really mean a fatted calf? Did it have fat on the meat? Or is this something different? What would be the purpose of making a calf fat? You get him all plumped up, you get him ready, and then you say, okay, now we're going to remove all that fat that we spent all this time making a fatted calf, and now we're going to remove it all. What does the word fatted mean here? King James Version says, my oxen and my fatlings are killed. Strong's describe it as grained or to make fat, meaning it was marbled, it was grained within the meat. Thayer's Bible Dictionary describes this word fattened as to be made fat. But God says, don't eat the fat of the animal. Well, to us, we think fat is fat, right? Well, no, there are different words that describe fat, and there's different types of fat that what God was describing. I want to look at this verse from Isaiah that described a particular feast, and we look at this when thinking about the Feast of Tabernacles, Isaiah chapter 25. Isaiah 25 and verse 6. Isaiah 25 and verse 6. It says, in this mountain the Lord of hosts shall make for all the people a feast of choice pieces. Fine things, choice pieces. a feast of wine on the lees, meaning old wine, wine that has aged. Now, that's another subject. It's not grape juice. This is fine wine, wine that has aged. When grape juice ages, it ferments. And so it's saying fine wines, kind of like the wine that Christ turned at the wedding supper, wedding meal. And they said, oh, you brought out the better wine at the end of the meal. Because it wasn't just, oh, you brought some fresh grape juice. No, he brought some fine wine. So here it says the feast of wines on the lees, or old wines, of fat things full of marrow, and of well-refined wines on the lees. The feast of well-refined and older wines, and the feast of fat things. Now, I've mentioned before that we go to the feast, and I think it's you and I that come back the fat things. It's like we're being stalled for 8 days and plumped up and made ready. But when it's talking about the feast of fat things, the actual word comes from a root word meaning to make fat. He said it's a feast of making fat. It also refers to oils or things with fatness. And it talks about full of marrow. I don't know if you've ever used bone marrow in cooking, but it's rubbed on meats, used as a seasoning. And it's also used sometimes straight out of the bone. They'll cook a bone in half, and you just take the bone marrow out and eat that bone marrow. It's actually very good for you. But according to Thayer's dictionary, full of marrow means to be rubbed with the marrow. They would take the marrow and rub the meat with this particular marrow. It also means richness. This does not describe a piece of meat where all the fat is removed. It's actually having some of that fat from the bone, from the marrow, rubbed back into it. Albert Barnes says of fat things means of rich delicacies. Fat things of marrow that are used to and being synonymous with a sumptuous entertainment and are made to be emblems of abundant provisions of divine mercy. Just as the Feast of Tabernacles, where there's the Feast of Lees, the Feast of Fine Things, the Feast of Fat, is eating the things that are praised as being abundant provisions, a time of abundance, a time of eating things that we normally don't get to eat. Let's go to Psalm chapter 63 and verse 5. Psalm 63 and verse 5. I'm going to read from the New King James. It says, my soul shall be satisfied as with the marrow and fatness. A soul being satisfied with fatness. And my mouth shall praise you with joyful lips, because it's something that's enjoyable. One is to intended to enjoy that good mouth-watering steak. Enjoy meat that is properly presented. One last comment on fat is the idea of having to remove it before cooking it. Now, I brought this point up when the person said, oh, you know, from what I understand, you have to cut and remove any fat from meat before you cook it, otherwise you're sinning. Think about the Passover that's coming up and how it was done in the Old Testament. In the Old Testament, they were told to take the lamb. They were to take the blood, meaning they bled out the animal, as it is in food processing. They removed the blood from the animal. Blood was put on the doorpost. But they were told to kill it and cook it whole with its entrails, even with all the intestines still inside of it. It was to be a whole sacrifice. And yet they were still told to eat the lamb, and none was to remain until the morning. So here a lamb was cooked with all the fat on it still. But in the process of roasting it and cooking it, that fat is removed. And they weren't eating the fat. It was cooked in it, but they are still not eating it. And if eating an animal cooked in its fat was a sin, then he was saying, cook it and eat it, because I'm going to make you sin on the night of Passover. Doesn't compute. That's not what he was saying. But it does give us a better understanding when we say, when those individuals who tell us, no, you have to remove all fat, it's like, well, here's a situation where the fat wasn't removed, it was cooked, and God said, eat it, and don't leave any of it until morning. Now, they weren't to eat the entrails, but they did eat the meat of the animal, and it was cooked with the natural fats. And if you've ever had lamb or prepared lamb. There's a lot of fat on lamb. You taste that fat and it renders out. 1 year for Night to Be Much Observed, I was bringing lamb and I had it in a big roasting pan and turned a corner and that fat and juice out of the lamb splashed out of the roasting pan. And it took months and months of scrubbing that to get the smell of lamb or mutton or whatever you want to call it out of my vehicle because it got down on the carpets and not something pleasant. But it has that when you're cooking lamb, there's a lot of fat within the meat, and it is rendered out in the process of cooking. From the article, What Do We Believe?, I also want to cover one last thing that is described here, and it's termed other animal parts. Some ask whether kidneys are okay to eat, based on their mention in several scriptures. While we see no explicit prohibition, it is noteworthy that this is the only organ mentioned in connection with animal sacrifices. You shall take of the fat that covers the entrails and the fatty lobe attached to the liver and the two kidneys and the fat that is on them and burn them on the altar. Same instruction is given in Leviticus 3, Leviticus 15, 4, and 7. In Leviticus 8, 16, 25, 9, 10, several parts in Leviticus, we read of the priest following this particular instruction. So in a sacrificed animal, the kidneys were not to be eaten. If the animal was sacrificed, you weren't to eat the kidneys of it. That doesn't mean if you're preparing your own food and you're not going to take any of it as a part of a sacrifice. So that is something where the sacrifice where the kidneys were offered doesn't necessarily mean kidneys are wrong. It's if it's offered as a sacrifice, you do not eat it, much like eating things sacrificed to idols. Barring clear prohibition, each person must decide whether the kidneys or other parts of the animal are acceptable to consume. Scripture really doesn't lay that out any more than what we're told there. Not to eat the fat, not to eat the blood, very clearly. But we have to understand what the fat and the blood are. But also, very clearly, things offered in sacrifice, as the kidneys were the only ones mentioned, not to be eaten if it's offered in sacrifice. If you've ever eaten hot dogs, and I hate to tell you this, hot dogs have a lot of those parts already in there. So if you've eaten a hot dog, you've had those parts. If you've eaten ground beef, if it just says ground beef, it can be any part of the ground beef, any part of the ground cow. If it's 100% ground beef, that means it has to be only muscle tissue. So in the stores, if you're looking and you go, oh, this is a great price on ground beef, sometimes there's a reason, because it could be any part of the ground beef, and so they're able to utilize more of the cow that way. But with hot dogs, you'd be surprised at what goes in there, whether you're eating turkey franks, beef franks, whatever it is, there's a lot of parts inside those hot dogs. They're great on a stick over a campfire, but not something you want to eat all the time. And, of course, they put all the chemicals in there as well to preserve them. Final thoughts, this is from What Do We Believe? While God does not specify or specifically prohibit eating any meats any parts of the clean animal other than the blood and the fat, a plethora of information is available today regarding the risk versus the benefits of consuming various animal parts. The biblical principle of moderation is also important in making healthy dietary choices. There's a lot of things out there today that probably are clean or edible that you go, but I know what the processes are, I know where it's been, or I know where it came from. And again, we may question. So the principle of moderation. And I know it's not the typical Bible study to go through and talk about animal parts and cooking and steak and meats. But with this particular, what do we believe? And it is questions that come up, especially with the blood and the fat. What is the fat? And what does it mean when it says not to eat the fat? Does it mean any part of the fat, or does it mean the specific fat that was used in the sacrifices? God said that's to be done in sacrifices. But yet he tells us to eat that meat, or the fatted meat, which is a delicacy. I think it's an important subject to cover, and especially when considering what we eat and knowing what God's word does say and what God's word doesn't say, rather than just assuming that we know what it means. Words have meaning, and even translation in words have meaning. And so the understanding of this particular subject of the fats, the meat, and the organs of an animal, that is what the church states as what we believe, and to have balance. We don't want to eat all of our meat raw, especially today because of the processing, but it is gives us balance in knowing how to eat and what to eat and what can be eaten from the biblical perspective.